was just listening. I'll tell you which one in a minute. I was listening to Reb Shaya, and is the mic on?
Yeah.
I was just listening to Reb Shaya now, and I was going to say some stuff, but I have to just comment on what he said. I was so into that that drasha that I was actually, when it finished, I was like, shame. Not just because I'm speaking next, but because I was actually very inspired. It's very nice to have practical stuff. I have a million and one stories about learning Hilchos Lashon Hara, which are life changing, but we'll save them for another day. I really do, but I'll save them for another day. Lemaisa, I wasn't going to say the stories, but I am now because one, no one's in a rush, and two, because just to add on to what Reb Shaya said, Reb Shaya was talking about Chinas Chinam, the self. How did you put it? Being self aware and have a positive perspective of oneself, and that internal. That internal battle, if you win that battle, so then you'll have less opportunities or less desires to look down upon other people. Because you feel good about yourself, you're happy with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you, you don't need to look down on other people. And this is definitely the Aleph. However, I want to just say that this is a very important middah, and I've got two stories that happened when I was living in Eretz Yisrael, and both of them are shy after this. I was thinking of them now when I was speaking. When I first got married, my wife and I went to a meal. I don't think for a second the Rav would mind me saying, because it's obvious, a certain Rav in Telstone, I'm not going to name it, but Lemaisa, he wouldn't mind, just in case he would. And we went to his house for a Suda, a Rav of mine who I was very close with, and he had a big, big, big long table. And we went there, we just got married, and we're there for Shabbos, whatever. And the Suda started, it was quite a very, happy household, South Africans, and there was some different Torah. So the son, one of the Kanai and Horror, maybe 10 children, and they're all quite, maybe from the age of, let's say, 5 until the age of, let's say, 25. Probably actually older, from, let's say, 5 till about 30. So the meal sort of starts, and I remember the first Dvar Torah, everything was in English, and broken English, whatever. And he starts giving this whole pilpul Ponovich, oh, this, that. Ugh. So I said to the person who gave it, who actually ended up learning with eventually years later, what do you do? He's like, oh, I'm doing the Rabbonut, I'm becoming a Dayan for the Beis Din and blah, blah, blah. And I'm moving to very Frum, Talmud Chochem. So he gives a whole long drasha. And then the Suda goes on, the next one gives a drasha and he starts quoting the Rebbe. The Rebbe, the Rebbe, the Rebbe, state the Rebbe. So I said to the Dayan, who's the Rebbe, he went, Lubavitch. I was like, oh, okay. So he starts giving a whole drosh about the Lubavitch Rebbe. I was like, okay, lovely. And then I was like, what do you do? He's like, oh, I live in, I don't know where it is, next to B'nai Brak. It's a Lubavitch area. I don't remember what it's called. Anyway. What's it called? Farachabad. Right. He lives there, right? So easy to remember. So he lives there. And he's got his bent hat, but he wasn't wearing it yet. And the mice, he lives there. And the Suda goes on. I'm thinking, this is a bit odd, right? And the Suda goes on. This is not a joke. And the next son gives the Dvar Torah, or starts talking. I mean, not the Dvar Torah, he's just talking and learning naturally. And he starts bringing Rav Kook. And he starts saying that Rav Kook held that you this, and Rav Kook held, it was going into the Shemitah, yeah? And he was talking all about how there was a heter Rav Kook, could excel the land, and whatever else. And the Dayan's listening. And I could tell he's really listening and really internalizing it. And he's saying, yeah, but what about that? And he's going, no, but fine. Now I'd get involved, right? Back then. But, and he starts telling us, and his wife's there, and she's wearing a headscarf thing. They live in, where is it called? Kfar Chabad. And they live in a settlement, wherever it is. I'm not sure exactly. And he's thinking, and the meal goes on. And then they start saying how the daughter, who's, she was probably about 19, is getting, they're talking to her, she just got engaged. I was like, oh, it's talking about Chosin. And he's learning in Kollel and B'nai Brak, and all the brothers are all having a joke, he's so stark, you can't talk to him about anything normal. The meal goes on and on and on. And then basically, you literally had, I think, above the age of 12, above the age, let's say, your young adults, around 8 of them, and it was literally, one. It was like, guess who? One was Chabad, one was Litvish, one was living in a settlement. One was it was unbelievable. So when the meal finished and we left, and we were walking back, and I said to my wife, I was like, what a weird, like, odd family. Okay, yeah, I didn't. I thought, what an odd family. Like, it's so strange. Every one of them is so different. Like they don't have any hashkofa. I don't understand. Like, how can you have it? I don't get it. Like, what happened? And she was like, what do you mean? They're good parents. I was like, oh, good parents. Because all of these children, they obviously made Aliyah. They all went to live in Eretz Yisrael. And they're all completely different, but they're all from, and they all respect each other. And it was a massive turning point in my life, because I realized that just because he's not like you doesn't mean that you have to be rude or not nice, or just because he doesn't agree with you doesn't mean that he's wrong. You can both rely on who you rely on. You both have your bond. And it was a massive turning point in my life. An incredible, incredible moment. Very close, still close to that, Rob. And Lemaisa, that's one thing about understanding, respecting other people and not dismissing them because they're different from us. I remember also one other story just on this point when we were living in Yerushalayim. We lived on the 7th floor. That's what they told us when we went to rent, when we were looking at it online. However, one of the floors was called Ephes, which is 0, and it was actually 2 floors. So, because it was the fire, it was the where they put the sukkahs. So, we're really on the 9th floor. So we're on the 9th floor. It gets quite hot there, and there was a lift, but it worked. It didn't work. It was quite scary. So I remember Erev Shabbos with little kids could be a bit tricky. You know, you're going up and down, thinking you've got shots, and it was all a bit hectic. One Erev Shabbos, and I remember thinking to myself, I was just like, oh, can't it just be normal? I don't understand. Anyway, a few floors below us, there was I cannot name them. This would be there was a certain couple. Not from England, and we looked at them like the perfect couple. You cannot imagine that, you know, they were early to the gun and around the corner, and he was always early for mincha, and like she was the perfect couple, you know. And we were like running up and down 8-9 flights and waiting for the lifts and getting trapped in the lifts and ringing the bell, and it was a fair love. And I mean, this couple had their sukkah built, I think, like, literally, most of Yom Kippur was already done. Like, and I'm like, you know, looking where I'm going to put it, you know, an hour before Shkia on Erev Sukkot, you know. The perfect couple. And I remember always, I never said it to my wife, but I remember always thinking to myself, like, what is going on here? Like, why? And my wife also must have been thinking, why does he constantly forget stuff? Like, why does he go to the shops? He doesn't, and give him that bag, he goes back. And so one Erev Shabbos, we were having guests, and I remember I forgot quite a few things this time. Before smartphones, whatever else. And I forgot like half the stuff. So I was like, okay, I'll go and get it. And this is literally probably an hour before Shabbos coming in. I'm running down the stairs and I hear screaming. There's a Gemara Brachos, like, you shouldn't daven, it's not my family. I heard screaming. I was like, what is that screaming? So it was coming from the floor of the perfect family. So I was like, oh, you can vault. Maybe my kids have gone round. So I walk through the hallway. This is a true story. I can't give too many details for obvious reasons, but I walk through the hallway. And I can hear, like, oh my gosh. Didn't put my ear to the door. I was like, hope everyone's all right. I'm listening, like, what is going on? Anyway, the perfect wife is screaming loud enough that the whole building can hear. And the perfect husband, because he only bought the dip that was the wrong make, screaming. Literally, I thought I heard screaming. Screaming. And I was like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't listen to this. Like, screaming. He's like, yeah, but they didn't have it, and I didn't want to go on a bus. You should have done it! And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I realised. So I went to the shops, I got my stuff, got the challah and everything else. And I came home, and I remember walking in, and my wife was like, sorry. I was like, no, it's fine. You sit down. This is the only time I'll do everything. And I remember I wanted to tell her the story.
Yeah, posh it, right?
I really wanted to tell the story, because I felt bad, and I felt like it'd be really good, but I'm kind of like, such an horror. But it's so geschmack. And it's literally, I mean, in a way, it's, what do you think? Is it okay? Is it all right? So Lemaisa, I didn't know what to do. So what I did was, I told my friend the story, and I told my friend to say the story about himself, in front of my wife when we went there for a month. So we went to my friend for a meal, and he starts saying, "Oh, on Erev Shabbos, I was going down the stairs and I heard screaming, and then I was very worried because someone was screaming and I didn't know what to do, so I put my ear to the door." I'm like, "I didn't put my ear to the door." I think my wife probably worked it out. But the Maaser, the message is, I know Rav Shai says 100% correct, that it starts at home. When you have a positive attitude about yourself and what Kosh Baruch Hu gave you, that's really the catalyst to not needing to look down upon other people. But on another level as well, you should realize, and they always say everything, if in doubt, just say it was Baal Shem Tov, right? So the Maaser, they say that the Baal Shem Tov said that you, what was it, that you get all the problems on the post-it notes, probably not post-it notes, and you throw them in the middle, and you would take your one in a million. Anyone who works in the Kehillah, anyone who works in Chinuch, in any type of family, they know that all the people, I'm not looking at anyone, all the people that you think are really normal are often the ones with chasam problems, and all the people that look a bit dysfunctional and a bit odd are often the happiest, and there's no way of knowing. And very often that you may be jealous of the car, but you have no idea, you know, of the screaming that goes on inside the car. You just don't know. So lemaisa, yes, lechatchila, aleph is having a positive outlook of yourself. But base is also that you should know that Kodesh Baruch Hu, every single person has challenges, every single person is having their own, fighting their own battles. And therefore that, along with aleph and base, should always be the way to deal with these things. But it is a life struggle. We're going to do a kind of about the structure base of Mikdash. Is it 20? Which one was it? 20? Was it 28? Yeah. Okay, so I haven't got the notes. So I think we're doing, I turned to the right page, yeah. All right. So we're doing, I'm not going to do it yet, don't worry, don't get excited. Okay, so we've got Chavches 28. Now, the first line here, it's talking about not being able to be consoled. Not being able to be comforted, I think is a better translation, Mr. Arskroll. Right, so not being able to be comforted over all the suffering that the Yidden have had. And I think it's important to realise here that there's one thing that's very, very, very interesting, is that we know that when the Mishkan was built, but many Rishonim say it also goes upon the Beis HaMikdash, that it says that Kodesh Baruch Hu B'soichem, he'll dwell within us, within you. And the Mefarshim say, what do you mean he'll dwell? Yeah, make for me a Mikdash, and I'll dwell amongst them. You, plural, dwell amongst, yeah. Now, it's, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will dwell amongst them, meaning amongst the Jewish people, it's very tricky because you would have expected to say, I'll dwell in the Mishkan, I'll dwell in the Beis HaMikdash, but the Pasuk seems to say he dwells amongst the Jewish people themselves. Now, we know that when the Midrash tells us that when Nebuchadnezzar went to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, he stood there and he put his, his head up to the heavens, and he said, you see Hashem, I'm going to destroy your temple, I'm going to destroy your Beis HaMikdash, you see I'm all powerful and whatever else. And it says in the Midrash, Kodesh Baruch Hu turned around and he said, I don't live there anymore. I'm not there anymore. I think Chazal said, you're grinding up, ground up flour. Ain't toichen, right? you're destroying something that ain't oil, it doesn't exist anymore, I've already left. So we commemorate Tisha B'Av, actually the wrong word, because it's like a bit like in the past, not in the past, we're trying to build towards the future, but we have Tisha B'Av once a year, but the Nights of Av is when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but really, Kodesh Baruch Hu left before that and joined us when we went into Golus, and he's always with us. So he looked up to Shemayim and he said, I've destroyed your home, I win, you lose. And Kodesh Baruch Hu said, I don't live there anymore. You're destroying rubble. I'm not there anymore. I'm with Am Yisrael. But you know, for Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Kotzker Rebbe said that for Kodesh Baruch Hu to dwell within someone, he dwells amongst all Yidden. However, he can only dwell where you let him in. So a shaila that you get very often in Chinuch, and I don't know, I've had it a few times, is can you daven for everything? So you always start by saying, of course. What about Arsenal? What about, can you daven for England in the World Cup? Can you daven? So you're at a crossroads because you think to yourself, well, maybe it's not the best thing to daven for, but you are having a mullah that Kodesh Baruch Hu runs everything. So whether you can or can't, we'll leave for today. But lemaisa, that attitude of bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into your life in all things, is where the Kotzke Rebbe says this is the point of Klal Yisrael, that we're not just looking to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, when I'm in shul, so I think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when I'm looking for a parking space at the fort, or when I'm late and there's traffic, I don't think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should have HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. All the time, thinking, thanking Hashem for things, little things, all the time. Things go right, when things go wrong, it doesn't matter. Just be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. And that's where the Shekhinah has left. According to the Shekhinah, in some ways, has left the base when the base of Mitzvah was destroyed, but it joins us in Golus. Now, they tell a story in 1967 about this concept of the Shekhinah living within Yidden. In 1967, we know there was a war, and it was a miraculous thing that the IDF was able to conquer Jerusalem. It was unheard of, unfathomable. Okay, they gave back a lot of it, but Lamaisa, there's a famous picture at the Kotel, I think, was a shofar. With
Gorin
was chief rabbi then, and then there were some soldiers there, and the way it worked was that a lot of the Frum soldiers wanted to be the first ones to go in, because they were desperate. They wanted to imagine being able to govern at the place, so they went in first, and their story is told that they were bawling and crying, they couldn't control themselves. Imagine. And then they tell a story that the more secular soldiers came in afterwards, and they also started bawling and crying. Many, 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 many historical accounts of this. So the Frum soldiers, in the diaries, we turned around, and we're like, why are you crying? Why are you crying? And they say the secular soldiers would say, because we don't know why you're crying, but we also need to cry. So they all cry together, because there's something inside of a Yid that just wants to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, I saw, they tell it, it's a medrash as well, and they also, did you mention Baal HaTanya? Yeah, you did, yeah. The Baal HaTanya says that in every Yid there's this potential Kedusha, no matter how far they've gone. The problem is that it's often coated in a lot of rubbish, but it's there. And there's a medrash that says that when the Beit HaMedrash was destroyed, there was, one of the Yidim was a terrible person, and he was giving information and whatever else, and they wanted to reward him when they were destroying the Beis HaMikdash, and they said, you can go in and you can take whatever you want. You can go in and you can take one thing. So he says, okay. So he walks in, and like any Yiddish, he walks in, he takes the menorah, and he walks out. And they said to him, you can't have that. We didn't mean that. We'll have that. So he took, and we know that because in Rome, you know. So he can go back in and take something else. And the medrash says, he turned around, he said, I can't go back, I'm not taking anything else. No. I can't take anything else. I've already upset HaKadosh Baruch Hu once, I can't go back in now. The biggest rasha you can imagine. And they said to him, what do you mean? You just go back in, take whatever you want, just don't have that. He says, no, I've upset HaKadosh Baruch Hu once, I can't go back in now, it's too much for me. If you don't go back in, we'll kill you. So he's okay, I'll die as a Yid, and he dies as a Yid. The biggest rasha you can imagine. But this is in what's inside of Yiddish Neshama. You know, I was reading online, trying to find interesting cases about these type of things. There was a case a few years ago, I think quite old, maybe 20 years ago, and the dates might not be correct, when there was a journalist, a secular journalist, a Jewish journalist, secular, called Daniel Pearl. Now, Daniel Pearl was, this was before everyone knew so much about terrorism and whatever else, and he was kidnapped. I think he was in Iraq doing some kind of interview. Yeah, probably not the best thing, but he was kidnapped, and they held him hostage for a while, and they said, we're going to kill him unless America does this and that, and America didn't do it, and eventually they released a video of him being killed. So they've got this video where he's saying all this propaganda rubbish about American foreign policy, and then at the end, the first bit they don't broadcast, because they said on the American diplomatic, whatever it was, it's just been under duress. Nothing he's saying is real, they've obviously got a gun to his head, whatever else. The bit they did release was at the end. And the reason they released it, I'm going to tell you what he said in a second, the reason they released it is because the father, Daniel Pearl's father and parents, they all said that wasn't under duress. We can tell from the way he's speaking that he's not under duress in that bit. In the first bit, he was mispronouncing words on purpose, and he's giving little signs that he's in trouble. But then, at the end, he spoke, and the parents said, that we want you to release, that's definitely not under duress. That, he's just speaking from his heart. Yeah. And then he was killed. And I want to tell you what he said. If you don't believe me, you can Google it, but not now. After Chazos. So, he turns around, and a secular Jew from America who's been kidnapped. He's been kidnapped for months and months, and he's about to be killed. They're literally standing there trying to kill him. And he gives all the American propaganda rubbish, and then from his heart, he says the following. He says, I'm a Jew, my mother's a Jew, and my father's a Jew, and we are Jews, and we're proud to be Jews. And I'll die as a Jew. And then he said something mind-boggling. So at the end, and you should know we're proud Jews, because my great-grandfather was a rabbi called Chaim Perl, and he founded B'nai Brak. And there's a street named after him, and they kill him. This is the video. It's mad. It's on the. Don't watch the video, but Lamaisa, you can read about it. He said this about B'nai Brak, a secular Jew, no shaykhus. And the last words were that I'm a Jew, my mother's a Jew, we're Jews, we're proud to be Jews, and my grandfather was a big rabbi, and he was such a big rabbi, he started B'nai Brak, and they named the street after him. And that was the part the parents wanted to release. That even in the most secular people who've gone so far, there's a Yiddish spark inside of them. It's there. You just need to find it. And I'll just end with the following. You know, you can get days like Tisha B'Av, you can get very clouded in a lot of misery, which of course is the point. But one also needs to look to the future. It's very, very important to build and to not get despondent and to not give up. And I'll just end with something from the Chumash itself. It says with Yosef and Binyamin, that when they met after many years, that they hugged and they kissed and they cried on each other's necks. He said he cried on Binyamin's neck and Binyamin cried on his neck. So Rashi there comes along and there's certain semantics which I'm not going to get into, where it's plural and it's singular, so he needs a drosha. So he says, you know why they were crying? He said, Yosef was crying on Binyamin's neck because, well, let's do that way around. Binyamin was crying on Yosef's neck because the Mishkan would be destroyed in Shiloh. And Yosef was crying on Binyamin's neck because the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed in his territory. That's why they were crying thousands of years later. What do you mean? What's an obvious kasha? When they cry for themselves. Why didn't Yosef cry for himself? He had Ruach HaKodesh. Why didn't he cry for himself? And why didn't Binyamin cry for himself? I'm crying over the Mishkan that's going to be destroyed in your territory, and you're going to cry over the Beis HaMikdash in mine. Well, why don't you cry for your Beis HaMikdash and you cry for your Mishkan? That's what they ask. And they tell a story that after the war, that there were many, many people who just couldn't talk about the war anymore. It was too difficult. It was too hard for them. It was too tragic. It was too difficult. And one of the rebbes, I'm going to get his name later because I just couldn't find it in my notes, but there was one of the rebbes who survived, and he would visit people. And he once went to visit a certain yid who just could not be consoled. And he gave him a hug, and they spoke for a few minutes. And eventually the Yid was consoled a bit more and he got on with his life. And they said to the Rebbe years later, what did you say to him? And the Rebbe said the following. I heard this actually from Rabbi Reiterer. The Rebbe said the following. He said to him, you know, why did Binyamin cry for Yosef and not cry for himself? And why did Yosef cry for Binyamin and not cry for himself? And the Rebbe said, the reason you cry for other people is because you can't change what they can do. They're in control of their future and you're not. There's only an element you can help them, but you can't do it for them. You can only help them push them in the right direction. But when it's yourself, you can change the future. You can build from today. So Yosef didn't cry for himself because he thought to himself, maybe I can make this not happen. Maybe I can inspire my descendants that this won't happen. I mean, you're involved yourself. I'm not going to accept my future this is going to be. But when it comes to someone else, I don't have the same element of control. So this Rebbe said to this survivor, he said, you know, we can't change other people. We can't change the outlook on life. But you need to get up today and build for the future. Just like Yosef didn't cry for himself, he had to get on with it. So too, Binyamin didn't cry for himself, he had to get on with it and get on with life. so too we have to stand up and get on with life. So yes, Tisha B'Av comes along once a year and we have to cry and mourn over the Beis HaMikdash, but then we also know that we then we have to get up and we have to rebuild ourselves and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Torah, Mitzvah, and Maaseh Tovim. Okay, we're going to be doing, is it?
Chofches.
Chofches.